It's just kind of like a reduction, a satirical reduction of their, you know, pride, you know, and privilege. So they're kind of just hanging out there and reveling in it a little bit. And that's the other side of it. They're actually quite happy to remain in an occupation, because as long as they're there, they feel like politicians will start to come over to their side. And we've kind of seen that happen. And although institutionally they'll be rejected in small sort of micro ways, you know, they're going to start brooking larger compromises on the right. As I said, ALEC is very interested, you know, a consortium of multinational corporations in the industry are extremely interested in stopping environmental regulations. And that's a huge part of why they're occupying a wildlife refuge. So this does enable people like Trump and Cruz and other Republicans to actually move further to the right and capture some of those wingnut ideas that are growing in popularity and presence. So some people are calling for some more kind of action, although it is ridiculous to say, you know, people should go in there with guns blazing and, you know, make this into kind of a martyrdom. But as to what's going to happen, you know, it's really hard to tell.
Alexander Reed Ross, thanks a lot for speaking with us. For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
My landlord, a wealthy man, a living off rent like the fat of the land.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of Eviction Free 2016, a rally and march organized by Portland Tenants United. On January 15th at 4:30 p.m., tenants will gather at Portland City Hall to demand an end to no-cause evictions, landlord retaliation, and persistent discrimination against racial minorities. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
Hello, neighbors, if you try to stop an eviction, I'd be by your side. Hello, neighbors, you know you should fight for a right for the common good.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening. This is KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7. This is Labor Radio, of, by, and for the working class. Your hosts for tonight are Fernando Gapacin and Ann McDonald. Ann McDonald is away right now in Arkansas. And tonight we're going to be discussing a proposal to defend the Abode decision. It has become an issue because in a Supreme Court case that's going to be heard by June 30th of this year, Friedrichs versus the California Teachers Association, the courts will be deciding whether or not they are going to uphold or to overrule the abode decision, which was decided in 1977. We have a guest panel tonight. We have Jeff Cosby from the North Shore Labor Council in Lynn, Massachusetts. He is also education director of a labor community coalition called New Lynn. He also has the distinction of being the only elected member of the National AFL-CIO Central Labor Council Advisory Committee that was created in 1996 to help revitalize the American union movement through the Union Cities Project of the AFL-CIO. He's a 40-year union veteran and past president of the huge GE plant in Lynn, Massachusetts. We also have Emmanuel Ness. He's a professor of political science at City University of New York. He's a labor organizer, activist, and writer about the world working class. His new book, Southern Insurgency, The Coming of the Global Working Class, examines the rise of rank-and-file labor movements throughout the world. If you want to get a hold of Manny, email him at manny.ness, N-E-S-S, at gmail.com. He's also the editor of a really fine working-class journal called Working USA. Manny, Jeff, are you both there?
Yes,
I am.
I'm here.
Okay. I'm also...
Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Good, good. I also have a guest here from Portland. In fact, when we put out the proposal to take up a national campaign to defend abode, Toby contacted me right away and said, wow, we really need something like this, and my community and my labor movement needs it. And Toby Green is a local community and labor activist and organizer. Toby.
Good evening, everyone.
I don't want to spend a whole lot of time describing the intricacies of the abode decision. I suppose people have to know that there's been over 450 Friends of the Court briefs filed regarding Friedrichs already. But can I ask, I'll ask a general question, please just answer. Why is defending the abode decision important, and how can we help to revitalize the American union movement through a fight to defend abode?
Well, I guess I'll go first. I think that this decision really strikes at the abode decision was really about allowing workers to meaningfully form unions in the public sector. And it's a concept that strikes to the heart of what being in a union is about, which is the ability to come together, make decisions, be able to disagree, but at the end of the day, be able to move forward. This Friedrichs, looming Friedrichs decision, what we're anticipating could happen is that it will injure workers' rights to organize. And so this gives us a potential to put the ability for workers to meaningfully organize right front and center in front of a lot of Americans this year.
Manny, Jeff?
Yeah, my understanding of the case is that essentially it will no longer allow local communities to negotiate with their unions a provision that people who are protected by the union and whom the union has to defend and bargain for would no longer be required to pay at least some dues. They would be able to get out altogether, become what we call free riders, and still have the benefits of the union, the collective bargaining, and everything else, but not have to contribute. And the comparison we make to that is it's like people could just opt out of paying taxes but still drive the roads and do everything else. So one of the problems that kind of undermines any sense of basic community and solidarity in the workplace, the way they're trying to do in society in general. Right now, you know, the impact of it is a little hard to predict. It'll be different in some unions than others, but the majority of the trade union movement right now is public sector, and because the private sector ones have become increasingly weak, and the numbers of people whom this could affect, who might potentially drop out, could be you know, in the millions. So that's a critical thing, as we just heard, for public sector people, union workers who want to protect their wages and working conditions. But not only that, these folks are also an organized voice for services. And I'll just give two examples, let somebody else go. But the Boston Teachers Union, my wife's a member of that. She's an occupational therapist there, withdrew their last wage demand at the end of their last contract negotiations in exchange for hiring social workers, I believe it was, to work in the schools with parents. And so, in other words, not their core group, by the way, who are the classroom teachers. And they also, my wife's union as an occupational therapist, has a limit on how many students she has to see. So it's something like 32 or for union-wide average, 37 or something for an individual maximum limit. You go to other places where they don't have that in their contract, and occupational therapists are supposed to be 75 kids. And I ask them how they do it. They say, we don't. It's impossible. So the unions defend public services, too. And so this is a blow at both of those things. And it's a blow at any kind of democracy in the workplace.
Manny?
Yeah, I agree completely with Jeff and the others on the line. I actually think it also raises questions about private sector unions. I know there in the Pacific Northwest, lots of folks there depend on Boeing and so forth. Boeing produces aircraft for the defense and so forth. And it's like telling the Boeing unionized workers, hey, you know, you can't really lobby the government to build this aircraft or that aircraft or other shipbuilding companies, et cetera. So this is an attack against working class people and the right to organize, period. I mean, I would say that the very question of any organization, whether it represents private or public sector workers, should have that right to articulate demands against government or with to government to hear their story and why it's necessary for specific workers to be treated well. When we talk about productivity, if for instance, Jeff's wife is working harder and harder, that means that they can say we've got all these productivity gains, and she comes home at the end of the day and she's completely exhausted. Yet at the same time, she doesn't get a raise for that, or that the union can't negotiate on her behalf. I mean, that's ridiculous. But I'd also say, just the key point is that many people in the Supreme Court, before the Supreme Court, are using this as just a public sector issue. I would argue that it reflects both public and private sector, because we all demand things from the government, and the government does a lot of stuff.
I wanted to ask specifically, reading one of the 450 Friends of the Court briefs, I read something by my friend Joel Rogers, his brief, and what he highlighted was, he provided data that showed how not only with in the states where agency shop or fair share is allowed, not only would it have a devastating impact on the unions, but because the unions would lose roughly 50% of their revenue, it would create a situation where they could not defend or help defend the rest of the union movement, and it would damage their ability to advocate, and which would have a huge impact on the local economies of those communities. So the ripple down effect of the overruling of Abode would be devastating, and I know that Toby was really excited as a community activist about getting his community behind this. Toby?
Well, I live in outer East Portland, which has had a wave of gentrification that's taken place like many major cities across the United States. And the 15 Now movement, along with Portland Tenants United, there is several efforts to try to keep families in their homes and try to have wage equity. The real wage equity, as we know on this line, the folks listening out there know, comes from having a union, because you can negotiate these issues with your employer. And so I view this very much in the scope of the best way for my community, which has a very low union density, to actually climb out and live with dignity and respect is through organizing and having a union. The fact is that this decision, as the other gentlemen on the line have talked about, this decision should happen this summer will really take away that attempt to meaningfully organize. So if you're somebody in East Portland and you want to organize with your employer and say, I need a raise because I can't afford to live in my home, it's going to be much harder. Because this decision, it's a week in public unions, but it's also going to, as has been said earlier, it's going to open up the door for further attacks.
We have to take a brief break. This is KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7. This is Labor Radio, of, by, and for the working class. We're talking about the proposal to defend the Abode decision. And we have our guest today, Professor Emmanuel Ness, labor educator Jeff Cosby, and labor and community activist Toby Green. So what are we doing, and what levels of organization, what are some of the things we can do to revitalize the labor movement and the union movement, and to get communities behind this? I've seen very little on websites. Some of the unions that are directly impacted by this have nothing on their websites, and I know that some unions are trying to revisit their members. I think that's a good thing, but it seems like it's not enough.
Fernando, can I add one thing to what Toby said and then speak to what you asked?
Absolutely.
He really made a fundamental point, I think it's important, which is that if you look at all the mainstream economists and they say, why are wages so bad? Why is inequality so bad? Why do jobs stink so bad? And they'll all say one of the reasons is lower union density. None of them prescribe almost increased union density and a way to make organizing easier as a solution to that, because they're just ideologically blindsided. And so behind this is simply what Toby said. It's an effort to reduce any ability of working class people to defend themselves. It's aimed at increasing inequality and decreasing wages and increasing the amount of money they keep from what we make. So that's, if we can explain it to that way, I think it'll have a a good impact. And that gets to your question. There are some things being done. I just checked. There's a rally today on the Supreme Court steps. It looked like maybe 500 people brought in folks from around the country. This is the first day they heard the case today. They start hearing arguments. So there is some publicity around it. That was in the front of the AFSCME and SEIU, I think. But I didn't see it on the AFT website, even though they had people there. So, and then there's a petition. They got this America Works Together coalition of unions and AFL-CIO and other folks. But it's they did a petition of 100,000 people that they took over to the group behind the challenge, the right-wing group. But all in all, I'm afraid what we're doing is responding, as we usually do, kind of sectorally. We don't have much of a labor movement. It's kind of pragmatic. You organize union by union. And we're maybe beginning to see more of a labor movement-wide and even, class-wide, which is what we need to defend this as an issue of democracy. But by and large, we don't respond that way. We respond as a sectoral movement, because that's the kind of trade union movement we have. It's kind of pragmatic, and all of us are preoccupied with our own problems.
Manny?
Yes, in fact, the New York Times today said the case is all but over, that it looks like labor is going to lose, which I think is a way to dissuade any kind of action whatsoever, because actually I think that if one were to look at the Abood decision, as well as Friedrich's attempt to undermine the rights that workers have fought for a very long time within the public and private sector, that they're basically saying, I mean, there really is a very strong interest in maintaining the agency shop and so forth, where workers are actually contributing to their unions. And to the point that you're making, you know, I think that groups, you know, such as Jeff's and several others around the country are engaged in actions that are there to educate working class people, members, and so forth, about the very fact that the right to have a union, which this new decision would take away, it bridges the very basic, perhaps one of the most fundamental civil rights of our time. In other words, have an organization at all, and that in this way, I think that the union movement needs to take examples from cities. You know, as you were pointing out earlier, you were involved with the 1996 the
Union Cities
movement. Union Cities. Movement. This is the way in which we really need to activate our movement, and I think that there are a number of very important cases, and I know that you, Fernando, and Jeff have been involved in it, and I'm sure Toby is as well. And we need to advocate and demand that if we deny the right to organize, we're violating a basic civil right in our society, and we need to take to the streets and make this very clear. I mean, it's just amazing how the Supreme Court and also the New York Times itself is saying, well, it's already over. I actually think not, because I think we need to start acting now.
Well, one of the things that has happened in the proposal that we've all had a chance to look at in terms of defending Abood, we spoke to the issue of trying to create some national activity around this. This weekend, one of the most dynamic chapters of Jobs with Justice, the Portland Jobs with Justice chapter, adopted a proposal to take on and defend Abood as a campaign that it would wrap around its other ongoing campaigns like Black Lives Matters, the 15 Now movement, and its ongoing defense of union organizing. And the way that we see it being integrated is to make our ongoing actions, such as our faith labor breakfasts, have a theme discussing the defense of Abood. Our May Day march that usually gets 2,000 or 3,000 people, to make the Abood decision part of that. And I know that we're trying to press National Jobs with Justice to actually take this on. And perhaps we could organize a massive march on the Supreme Court. I know that Toby wanted to go to the city council and most any public agency and raise a day to celebrate workers' right to organize. So, you know, our local chapter of Jobs with Justice is going to open up a website so that at least there's going to be some place where people can find out about the events, can find out how they can be directly involved in the defense of the Abood decision and the revitalization of the labor movement.
I think along those lines, Fernando, we're not going to start winning this issue until it is brought into the workplace. Right now we're approaching this as a Supreme Court decision, which doesn't leave a lot of room for initiative for people outside of the Supreme Court. I think what Jeff and Manny have been saying is completely correct. I think that we need to get to, if you're a union member and you're listening to this program tonight and you're hearing this, you should be asking a very serious question right now, which is, what's the future of my job, my workplace conditions, my wages, my benefits, how is this going to impact my family? And you should be asking some hard questions. And frankly, I think that our unionized employers should have pressure come on them to weigh in, because this is going to create disruption maybe that they weren't looking for in the workplace. Obviously, we understand that many employers want to have control in the relationship, but they like to usually pick that control when to exercise it. This decision, they can't calculate in. No employer in the country right now can calculate in what the impact is going to be, how the unions are going to respond in the workplace. And I think that that's a major advantage that we have that could actually turn the tide, is if we start going to our employers and saying, look, this decision happens, you can't pencil in what's going to happen. And we're going to try to keep our union as strong as possible. And I think that that's a really, really positive point that has to be pressed, is in finding some way to give rank and file members and workers control and buy in this movement, and take it out of being a Supreme Court decision that's happening somewhere else, and saying, okay, how is this going to happen in Boston, Massachusetts? How's Portland, Oregon going to respond?
I did want to point out that in a lot of the writings that Manny has produced, it seems that he's searching for a way to revitalize and to rebuild our contemporary union and labor movement. And here is a great opportunity. I remember in the 70s and the 80s, when we would amass demonstrations of 75,000 to 100,000 people, one to celebrate the notion of solidarity, and in the 70s we built huge demonstrations to beat back the racist Bakke decision. And so the thing is that there is something that we can do. And there is a generation of people willing to do it.
What I think is positive about what you're saying, as I understand it, Fernando, is two things. One is you're arguing for a more action-oriented and protest, pressure-oriented kind of venue, you know, their avenue to try to push this thing. And, you know, like a national march, you know, I don't know what that would require some of the affiliates to get behind it, I think, but that's a possibility. And then the second thing is tying it into campaigns that are already going on, and everybody can do that. You know, you can kind of weave it into stuff that we're already involved in. So obviously it's hard for everybody to drop everything they're doing and then switch over to this particular Supreme Court decision, as important as it is. But those two things, you know, I think are possible for everybody to do. And you know, and the other thing that you said that makes sense to me is the harder we fight this thing and the deeper we take this struggle, the stronger we come out either way. We may be in a position where we're in a situation like half the country is already basically right to work. Federal workers, postal workers, they're already that way. We may be in a situation where we have to fight under those terms. But the better we behave politically, the better strategy we have, the harder we fight between now and June when the decision comes down, the better condition we'll be in either way, win, lose, or draw. And we contribute to a broader sense of what the labor movement is supposed to be about.
Manny, last word from you.
Yeah, I completely agree with all the points that were made, and would say that win, lose, or draw is the point. I think we want to win. If we lose in this context, it means that people like in New York State who do not have the right to strike could strike any time they want, which might be a good thing, in which case that we... As you were pointing out before, workers don't gain anything without direct action, without mobilization of membership and who aren't even members. Because just like any other movement, Black Lives Matter, Fight for 15, and so forth, these movements don't develop out of thin air. They need to have a rank-and-file base. And I would say that the Supreme Court risks a lot of political stability that it thought the government thought it had for many years by deciding against the Abu decision. So it's a terrible decision, but it ain't over if we lose. And I think that's important to recognize that we could, I mean, I hope we win. I hope the Supreme Court does the right thing. But in this context, there are the labor movement is still alive and well and kicking, and we need to make sure that we mobilize our members to ensure that continues to be the case. Members will organize anyway.
Well, as Frederick Douglass said, the thing is that if we don't demand the right to organize, we're certainly not going to get it. This is the time to demand it. This is Labor Radio on KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7. And thank you, and I hope that we can do this show again, because there's more to this, and I'll be inviting you guys on again. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for it.
Bye-bye. Thanks, everyone.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
My landlord's a wealthy man, living off rent like the fat of the land.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of Eviction Free 2016, a rally and march organized by Portland Tenants United. On January 15th at 4:30 p.m., tenants will gather at Portland City Hall to demand an end to no-cause evictions, landlord retaliation, and persistent discrimination against racial minorities. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
Hello, neighbors, if you try to stop an eviction, I'd be by your side. Hello, neighbors, you know you should fight for a right for the common good.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can all